mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after a number of events held last month in his honor, the establishment of the Gavin Creel Memorial Fund will ensure a long legacy of supporting the arts in his hometown. Just one of many ways the Community Foundation facilitates those who want to make an impact in a positive way. Also this morning, it's Financial Literacy Awareness Month, but you may not be as financially literate as you think you are. How to cut through the noise and misinformation to make the right money moves, reach your personal goals. And happening around town, it's a showcase for local talent. We have details on this weekend's open mic night at the Black Heritage Library and Multicultural Center. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. So I thought this was really interesting, a story that I saw in the Newswire. It jumped out at me. I thought this is a perfect story to talk about. First thing out of the gate, we look for the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, because we're coming up on summer vacation season. People will be traveling, and there are always a certain segment of people who are kind of nervous about flying. And especially right now, because there have been so many stories in the news about airplane accidents and near misses and things like that. So you got a lot of people who are nervous to fly. And this story jumped out at me. Bounce.com has ranked the top airlines for travelers who are afraid of flying. The ranking factors in safety records, but also cabin crew and passenger comforts, to sort of put people's minds at ease who might be nervous about flying. And I thought, hey, this is perfect, because you know that's something that I know a lot of people have that fear to one degree or another about flying. But then I dug into the rankings. And the top airlines are all Asian airlines. Singapore Airlines was number one with its spacious seats and in-flight meditation playlists. It says here they scored 8.94 on a scale of 1 to 10. They also have perfect review and safety ratings alongside an overall stress-free score of 8.94 out of 10. Singapore Airlines excels in passenger experience, according to the authors of the report. Number two on the list, Korean Air. And so I thought, hey, this is great, except that the airlines that are at the top of the list, and then there are other European airlines as well, and Scandinavian airlines, but they're all foreign carriers. So while at first glance, I thought this would be perfect to talk about, the airlines at the top of the list are among the ones that are the least likely to be flown by nervous passengers. You know what I mean? Of all of the airlines, if you're somebody who is generally averse to airlines, you are among the least likely people to be flying any of these airlines that are at the top of the list. But I did think this was interesting. It says, in terms of what nervous travelers most dislike while flying, 51.6% picked screaming children. That is number one on their list of the most uncomfortable factor for nervous travelers. I got news for you. That is among the most uncomfortable things for any traveler, whether you're a nervous traveler or not. Nobody likes screaming kids on the flight. 51.5% say turbulence is what makes them most uncomfortable when they fly. And again, not a huge surprise. You know what I mean? It's something that nobody likes. So anyway, I thought it was going to be a terrific story as we come up on vacation season, and it turns out there's not really a whole lot of helpful information there. But anyway, some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day here. This is amazing science. American scientists claim that they have now allowed the participants in a new study to see an entirely new color that human beings have never seen before. How often do you get to say that they have created a new color? This was created by firing laser pulses directly into the eye. Okay, well, on second thought, maybe I don't want to see this new color. If that's what it takes, I think I'm good. It was part of a research project, according to engineer Ren Ng. We predicted from the beginning that the experiment would look like an unprecedented color signal, but we didn't know what the brain would do with it. The pulses simulated retina cells to give the impression of a never-before-seen intense bluish-green color. They've given it a name. They call it Olo. That's the name of this intense bluish-green color that has never been seen by humans before. And can only be seen with these lasers firing pulses directly into the eye. Didn't know what the brain would do with it. Well, the brain saw it as a new color. Olo. It is from the binary code 010. Olo is what it looks like. So that's how they came up with the name. We have a new color, apparently. Somebody tell Crayola. When I get this in my next box of 64 crayons here. Let's see. This is an important item to be aware of. Scam alert. Google has issued a warning confirming that a sophisticated phishing attack might find its way into your Gmail account. If you use Google's Gmail, this scam was first reported by a web developer who noted that the email appears to come from a legitimate Google email address, except that it is tagged as sites.google.com instead of accounts.google.com. That is the only surefire telltale sign. The email itself apparently states that the user has been served a subpoena, and it does appear pretty convincing. Other than the fact that courts will not serve you a subpoena via email. That's not how that works, because there's no way to know whether you actually received it or that it has gone to the right person. They just don't do that. But it looks convincing, and if you go to the sender's email, it can be very difficult to tell whether it's legit or not. A Google spokesperson says, "We are aware of this class of targeted attack from this threat actor." That's what they call them. They don't call them scam artists. They call them threat actors. "A targeted attack from this threat actor, and we have rolled out protections to shut down this avenue for abuse. In the meantime, users are encouraged to adopt two-factor authentication and passkeys on their account." I'm not sure how that would make a difference in this case, because it's just an email that you receive. It's not like they're hacking into your account, but be on the lookout for that phishing scam. It may be hard to detect, but now you know that it's out there. And a couple of other items among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This will probably happen later today. Health and Human Services Director Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will be announcing the ban of a number of artificial food dyes in the nation's food. 8 dyes that are petroleum-based synthetic dyes are on the list. It is a move being cheered by food activists who have long said that a number of these dyes in our food are unhealthy and are themselves causing health issues. Director Kennedy is due to make the announcement at a press conference this afternoon. He has previously said that he wants all artificial dyes to be phased out within 2 years. So this is, I guess, the start of that. 8 petroleum-based artificial dyes, synthetic dyes, to be prohibited. Many of these have already been outlawed overseas, so it should not be a big deal for the companies who use these dyes to comply with the new regulations, because they've had to use them in other countries that have previously banned them. But they're cheaper, and they're more readily available, and so that's why they are used in this country. But no more as of this afternoon, apparently. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, something to keep in mind as you are just waking up this morning. If you used cannabis as a way to help yourself fall asleep last night, you are not alone. A lot of us have or are using cannabis to help us sleep. According to new research from the National Sleep Foundation, 22 million, or about 9% of the U.S. population, currently take cannabis to help us sleep. Even more, 45 million previously have. Nearly a quarter of American adults say they are likely to try it in the future. The National Sleep Foundation, however, seems to feel like the jury is still out on whether it actually works. Joseph Zareski, I guess. I'm not sure if that's exactly how you pronounce it, but he's the Senior Vice President of Research and Scientific Affairs for the National Sleep Foundation, says there is currently limited and mixed scientific evidence that supports the effectiveness of cannabis to help with sleep problems. Until there is a clearer understanding of the effects, the public should be discerning and have guarded expectations when considering these proposed sleep aids. So, or you can just get really baked, and that'll help you fall asleep naturally, and it'll just put you out eventually. You smoke yourself into unconsciousness there. Anyway, just kind of interesting for the millions of people who have turned to cannabis-related products to help them sleep, may or may not actually be working. But if it works for you, hey, you know, more power to you. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
This is ONN. I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. In Southwest Ohio, Jiarong Ouyang, a doctoral student at the University of Cincinnati, is suing the Department of Homeland Security after his student visa was revoked. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that he is one of 3 Chinese students who have had their visas revoked and may face deportation. Ouyang has never been convicted of any crime while residing in the U.S., where he's been for over 10 years. The move puts his degree at risk. The goal of the lawsuit is to get the courts to force the administration to allow completion of studies. A Central Ohio grand jury handed down a 27-count indictment against Gary Kesey Jr., who is accused of sexually abusing multiple victims. Doug Petcash with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
Kesey is the son of pastors at New Albany's Faith Life Church. Prosecutors say all of the victims had connection to the church. However, prosecutors said as of now, they are not aware of the abuse happening at or in the church. The prosecutors say there were 3 victims whose ages range from 6 to 15 years old. The charges date back to 2002 when Kesey was around 13 years old, and they continue through 2011 when the suspect was about 22.
The Cleveland Guardians beat the New York Yankees 6-4 yesterday. Cade Smith got his first save of the season. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
So something of a follow-up in our cover story this morning. You remember last month there were a number of events that were held in honor of Gavin Creel. You had the Findlay High School Musical, the youth theater production. There were other things that went on in the performing arts space and around the community as kind of a Gavin Creel Memorial Weekend to help fund the Gavin Creel Memorial Fund at the Community Foundation. And joining us this morning is Community Foundation CEO Brian Treese. And so it's just one example of, we talked about the way the Community Foundation facilitates those who want to make an impact in a positive way. This is a fund that will ensure a legacy of supporting the arts in Findlay and Hancock County.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. So the Gavin Creel Memorial Fund was created by a friend of Gavin's. It was started by David and Mary Beth Coolidge, who wanted some sort of way to make sure that his legacy would live on, because he left an incredible mark, not just on Findlay, but the entire global community with his work and with his talent.
Yeah.
And so this specific fund goes towards supporting capital projects for the arts at Findlay City Schools.
Okay.
So it will be something that as they dream and as they think about how to create those spaces for the upcoming Gavins, the young kids that are in our schools right now that are looking for that outlet, this fund will help make sure that we have the physical spaces in Findlay City Schools to make their dreams happen.
And that fund is open for contributions and donations moving forward, really at any time. We talked about the the special weekend to help fund the fund, but you can do that anytime.
Right. You can drop off a check or bring in a gift to the Community Foundation offices. Or if you go to our website at www.community-foundation.com, there's a way to do online giving now or recurring gifts, whatever works for you, especially those that knew and loved Gavin. It's a way to remember him.
Yeah. This is just a perfect example of what the work that you do at the Community Foundation, because in hearing you describe how this started, it's basically somebody who has an idea, wants to do something, and then comes to the Community Foundation and says, how do we do this?
And we have these kind of conversations all of the time. If you look at what we do, the best ideas start with a dream. Mm-hmm. And it might be a way to remember somebody, or it might be that you see a problem in our community that you want to address, that you want to do something. And you know there are other people who share your passion. Mm-hmm. Come have a conversation. We can talk about all of the different ways to support this and how to start a fund. And then it's getting other people to contribute. And it can either be while somebody is living or after they pass. We also do estate plans and planned gifts where people say, this is what I want to do when I'm no longer here, so that the community that I love will always remember me.
Yeah. And it can take a number of forms. In this case, the Memorial Fund will help specific capital projects, as you were mentioning. You do a lot of scholarships
as well. And this is a special year for our scholarships. It is our 30th anniversary for doing a scholarship program. In 1994, we started our first scholarship, and it awarded in 1995. So in 30 years, we have some pretty impressive statistics. When you think about it, there have been over 2,550 recipients of scholarships in that time frame, which equates to over $6.6 million in scholarship funds.
Wow.
And like we talked about with the Gavin Creel Memorial Fund, each of those started with a dream. And my family has a scholarship fund as well. And it's that way of thinking about how you want to support that next generation of learners in achieving their dreams.
And this can be, and anybody can do this. This is what I think maybe sometimes is lost, or people don't realize. You don't have to have a huge amount of money. You don't have to be the president of a bank or a corporation or somebody who's, you know, going to fund this yourself.
Right.
It can be just Joe Average who... I have a friend who started a scholarship in memory of his wife who had passed away. Just an everyday average guy who started a scholarship fund, and now here you are.
And I think that's one of the misconceptions of the Community Foundation, is that you have to have incredible wealth to partner with us. And one thing we've really been working on the past couple of years is that everyone in our community, if we are the Community's Foundation, everyone can partner with us. And it can look differently depending on your circumstances, but we have a variety of pathways. So you talked about your friend. We talk to people all of the time that it's, let's talk about the long of this, the long game. How do we make that dream happen? Not necessarily today, but in the future, so that you feel that you're honoring whatever that idea, or in your case, the loved one, in Gavin's case, the loved one.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that we have that in place?
The really cool thing is that the these things can be done in perpetuity. Again, with the appropriate funding, and maybe that is an individual who funds it entirely, or takes contributions, and it's sort of a community building the fund. But you reach a point where you can do this forever.
Right. Most of our funds are endowed, mm-hmm. which means that we take a portion of it every year. Right now, it's 4.5% to go to whatever the cause is, whether the fund is set up to support a specific nonprofit or a scholarship or for a big field of interest like housing or beautification. And then it lives forever, like you said, so that that memory. Mm-hmm. So we'll take the example of a nonprofit. Every year, they will get a distribution from the fund and see that person's name on it.
And that is administered through the Community Foundation?
And that is one of the things that we do. And it's one of the great blessings that we have, that we can help honor people and honor memories and honor stories. Mm-hmm. And if you come to our office, you can see pictures of the people, because behind every one of our funds is a story.
Yeah.
Of a story of a person.
Yeah.
Or a cause, or an idea, or a belief.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing. I mean, it's one thing, you may have a dream of starting a scholarship fund or some other sort of memorial fund, or, you know, whatever it might happen to be. But then not only how do I start it, but how do I administer it, or how is it administered moving forward?
And we take care of all of that. We set up, it's called a fund agreement. That's the technical language. Mm-hmm. But we make sure that whatever the wishes are documented in mm-hmm. perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And then we have some backup plans. So I think we all hope that some of the nonprofits that we love will not need to exist in the future, that whatever they're working on will have been solved and won't need to be addressed. We have a backup plan so that when hopefully that happens, we can direct those funds to still do good.
Talk about dreaming big. So how many, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I suspect that you may already know these statistics. How many of these funds currently does the Community Foundation administer?
We have over 500 funds.
Wow.
That each have a different set of guidelines, that each go to support something different. Mm-hmm. And that's the joy of working with a Community Foundation, is we can help you with all of these different things.
Yeah. And how do people start? I mean, what's the process? Again, if somebody has an idea, this is something that I want to do, either a scholarship fund or something to support a particular cause, what's the process?
The easiest thing to do is reach out to us, to have a conversation with us, and it all starts with a conversation. Then we can talk and refine and brainstorm. So the best way is to reach out. And all of our contact information, again, is on our website, or we're on the second floor of the Chase Bank building downtown Findlay.
Mm-hmm. And how long does it take typically to set up a fund? Again, whether we're talking about a scholarship or some other kind of fund.
Typically, it takes a couple of meetings, because our process is that we are not in the high-pressure business. Mm-hmm. We want it, the best giving feels good. Mm-hmm. And if there's any sort of pressure, it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
So we take as much time as it needs. We can do it as short as a couple of hours. But then we have some folks that we've been working with that are still toying around ideas, and it's taken months or years. Mm. So it's on the person's timeline, not on ours.
We have a link for more information at our webpage for the Gavin Creel Memorial Fund specifically, because, again, and is that fund now fully endowed? Because I know this is very new. This was just launched.
Right. It started at the end of 2024, mm-hmm. and right now it has about $7,000, and it needs to get to $10,000 before they can do anything with it.
Okay.
So that they are still
still working. Yeah, still working.
Crowdsourcing for that.
And we've got a link for more information if you feel so moved to make a contribution there, or if you want to learn more about the other funds or even setting up your own. We have that link at our webpage. And again, Brian Treese, CEO of the Community Foundation, with us this morning. Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, as we've mentioned, April is Financial Literacy Awareness Month. The fact of the matter is, though, that in this day and age, you may think you are more financially literate than you actually are. And that's because from TikTok tips to AI finance tools, there's an awful lot of misinformation that is floating around out there. And so joining us this morning to help cut through the noise, put you on the right path to true financial literacy is Dr. Erica Rasher, Chief Financial Wellness Advisor at Beyond Finance. And Erica, we hear so much conflicting advice online. How can people separate financial fact from fiction in this age of misinformation? How do you know who to trust?
You are so correct about it being the age of misinformation. And the more grounded you are in your financial goals and the more you can trust your financial decision making, the easier it is to spot bad advice and avoid those costly mistakes. And so I encourage everybody to bring a really solid dose of healthy skepticism to everything they're consuming. Don't take things at face value. You know, we don't know, you know, what we don't know until we know. And so it's important to stay away from that bad advice by doing some research, you know, doing some fact finding around that, whether it's information you're getting from a social media post or from an influencer, or maybe even the output from, you know, something you put into ChatGPT. It's so important to make sure that that information is correct. And the same goes for vetting influencers. You know, anybody these days can, you know, put on a hat and call themselves a financial guru and buy 300,000 followers online and take your money. It's important to be aware of the scams that are out there and make sure people's qualifications, you know, match the talk that they're talking. Make sure that they're walking that talk.
Yeah. To that end, Beyond Finance just released a new survey. Some interesting information in this. What were, to you, some of the biggest surprises about how people are making money decisions in 2025?
Absolutely. The biggest one that surprised me is that only 13% of Americans currently feel very good about their finances. You know, and there's 74% of people out there who are managing their finances alone. And despite all that, we have to consider those emotional drivers like anxiety and even that lack of foundational financial knowledge and past mistakes that people have made, you know, as things as factors that continue to erode financial confidence. Because another statistic that came from this is that half of the country doesn't even trust themselves to manage their money.
Mm. I did think it was kind of interesting, some of the data. You talk about shifting priorities in the way, especially younger people today, or just people in general, seem to be redefining the priorities. That is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, misinformation and avoiding the bad stuff that is out there. But the idea of redefining priorities can be a good thing. This is something we should be very intentional about.
Absolutely. You know, true financial well-being starts with building that trust in yourself. And that means investing in your knowledge, your mindset, and your future, and leaning less on external voices or influences to inform you and really forging your own path forward. You know, and we see that a lot with Gen Z in particular. You know, 59% of the Gen Zers we talk to, you know, they're really, really finance forward. They're really taking, you know, their financial success seriously, which is a wonderful thing to see. But they're also a little bit more, you know, focused on that short term, wanting to more live in the moment, which is something different we see as like compared to baby boomers, you know, who are not so interested in living for the moment. They're more, you know, long-term future focused.
Thinking big picture. So with that in mind, you are going beyond just Financial Literacy Awareness Month and proclaiming this to be Financial Practice Week. What is the message of Financial Practice Week?
So the message of Financial Practice Week is invest in you. It's very much about focusing on a person's unique needs, their values, their goals. That way you can begin to practice ownership of your financial life and your wellness for this sense of holistic self-care.
You know, one of the other things that was reflected in the survey, and I know this is, you know, you don't really need a survey to tell you this because it is really, really obvious, and people will tell you this all the time, that there are a lot of folks who feel overwhelmed by their finances. This is a longstanding problem. What are some of the steps that people can take? And it really speaks to what you were talking about just a moment ago. What are some of the steps that people can take to begin to, I guess, reclaim their financial story, if you will?
Absolutely. And first, I want to affirm exactly what you just said. This is something that is an issue. You know, people are overwhelmed by finances.
Yeah.
And if that speaks to you as you're listening to this, know that that is a normal thing. And so I invite you, as the first step in this process to take care of the overwhelm, is to really focus on developing your personal self-concept around money. Look at your values, your beliefs, your experiences, and your emotions, and reflect on those to understand how they've influenced your financial choices, and figure out whether or not that's something you want to continue with, or if there's something you want to change about that to move forward. And as part of that, that also includes really prioritizing your financial health as a part of your overall self-care routine. I'm talking about that, you know, holistic wellness. You know, your emotional, your mental, your physical, and your financial are all very important, especially since our finances intersect with each and every one of those. You can't really separate it. And once you can do those two things, that self-concept practicing and, you know, taking your financial health into your self-care, you can really start to distinguish between what's helpful and what's not, you know, that fact, that fiction, that external noise, and guide yourself forward into finding those personalized strategies that really work for you so you can develop that consistent and sustainable habit building and routines that build confidence instead of drain the confidence right from you.
You make such a good point that I think it's worth underscoring. Even if you encounter some advice or some guidance that may not necessarily be incorrect, I mean, it may be factually correct on its face, that doesn't necessarily mean it's right for you. So again, being a little discerning, not just to separate fact from fiction, but what is relevant from what is not relevant for your particular situation, for your values, for your goals, that kind of thing. It is a lot to digest, but so very important. Again, Dr. Erica Rasher is Chief Financial Wellness Advisor at Beyond Finance. Where do we get more information? You have more resources that are available for folks to help kind of guide them through this process, right?
We do. We've been busy at Beyond Finance. So if you go to the newsroom at beyondfinance.com, you can check out all of our Financial Practice Week resources and even download the financial practice guide that we've created for you.
Great stuff. Dr. Rasher, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Information that makes a difference. Good mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A follow-up to the Easter holiday. This is absolutely fantastic. In Belgium, forget the eggs, a brewery decided to hop to it for Easter with a unique celebration. The Ewers Gardens Brewery, this is in Belgium, hosted its annual World's Biggest Beer Hunt for Adults. Forget the eggs. This is the world's biggest beer hunt where adults search for 12,000 hidden bottles of beer. This is a great idea. We need to do that in this country. How did this not happen in America? One special golden beer allowed its finder to claim a prize of their weight in beer. If you found the golden beer bottle, you would win your weight in beer. The event on Easter Sunday began with a chocolate egg hunt for the kids, and then 1,000 adult beer hunters descended on the grassy field for the world's biggest beer hunt. What? That's awesome. That is all kinds of awesome right there. We need to start one of those up here in Hancock County, Ohio, I think. That's a great idea. Elsewhere in the broken news, police in Los Angeles are searching for a vandal who allegedly chopped down dozens of shade trees in the dead of night. And there aren't a whole lot of trees in L.A. to begin with. And now there are even fewer. Some very large trees were felled on multiple streets, including South Grand Avenue and Olympic Boulevard, between Friday and Saturday night, according to officials. The LAPD says I don't know why someone would take away from the trees, especially in downtown, which is not a lot of opportunity for trees to grow in the first place. Police department says surveillance video shows the suspect riding up to one tree on a bike and cutting it down with a chainsaw and then going down the line, sawing down other trees as they went. The suspect has not yet been apprehended. Still on the loose. The serial tree killer. In the world would possess somebody to do that. What did the trees ever do to you? Especially in L.A. My goodness. Elsewhere in the broken news, in Kilgore, East Texas, police have arrested a man they say accidentally shot off a flare gun inside a local Walmart store. He was trying to rob the store. He was shoplifting at the time and accidentally shot off a flare gun. That is not the way to be inconspicuous. Happened this past Saturday. Police got a 911 call about a man trying to hide items, I guess like under his jacket or something. And that's when the flare gun accidentally went off. Some people might want to rethink the whole life of crime idea. This is one of those guys. Just before police arrived at the scene, the flare gun was discharged. Police say Roy Mac Biggs of Longview then put the tried to inconspicuously put the flare gun back on the shelf and headed for the store's exit. But by that time, he had already been spotted shoplifting. A loss prevention officer stopped him before he could leave. Mr. Biggs was booked into the Gregg County Jail on charges of deadly conduct and theft. Again, one of those people that should not be involved in a life of crime. That's not for you. That's how you know that robbing stores as a means of supporting yourself is not the way to go for you. Not to be outdone, man in Monticello, Kentucky, is accused of making his son shoplift from the Walmart there. Apparently, at least he knew that maybe he's not the best shoplifter, so have your son do it. You know, Walmart cracks down on shoplifters. They lower the boom on people who try to shoplift. So just have your son do it instead. Jonathan Carlton was arrested at the store in the Cumberland Crossing Center in Monticello, Kentucky, over the weekend. Police say he placed a number of items in a shopping cart and then told his 13-year-old son to leave without paying for them. Again, a loss prevention officer stopped the teen before he could get out the door, and he and Mr. Carlton were charged. Mr. Carlton also faces now a charge of endangering the welfare of a minor. In addition to conspiracy to shoplift. File that one under. Sounded like a good idea at the time. I'll just have my son steal for me. Father of the year right there. He is not. And lastly, here in the broken news this morning, a school district in Texas has removed some information. If you were to go to the school library at the Lamar Consolidated Independent School District in Texas, you would think that there were only 49 states, and that is because they have removed certain references to the state of Virginia due to the Great Seal of the state and the state's flag, which depicts the Roman goddess Virtus standing over a slain tyrant, and her left breast is exposed on the state flag. The school district apparently censored the flag because it violated the school board's library policy, which bans illustrations of frontal nudity. And so they have removed the state flag of Virginia from the library. So if you were to go to the library there at the Lamar Consolidated Independent School District, as far as you know, there would only be 49 states of the Union, because Virginia's been quite literally wiped off the map. Oh, this is just weird. There you go. That is today's. I'm all for protecting kids, and all of that from obscene images, but that seems maybe a little extreme. There you go. That is today's. But then again, on the other hand, what is the state of Virginia doing with a naked lady on their state flag? Maybe that's the question we should be answering. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing is Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest Golf Club in Findlay. Register at HancockHOF.com under the Events tab. Registration fee is $300 per team or $75 per person. Proceeds from the outing benefit the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing, Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest. Register at HancockHOF.com. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So earlier we were talking about Financial Literacy Awareness Month and Financial Practice Week, and we referenced that new survey from Beyond Finance. And I want to dig into that a little bit more, share some of those numbers from this survey, because I think it's really interesting. Snapshot of where we are and where we want to be financially. They asked 2,000 Americans, and they found that very few of us feel very good about our financial situation currently. Only 13% said that they felt very good about where they are financially. 28% feel somewhat good. But despite those low numbers, respondents in the survey are trying to be smart about their money. 84% said setting themselves up for financial success in the future is more important than ever in times of economic uncertainty. And half of Americans, little more than half, 51%, said the current economic uncertainty has caused them to take steps to improve their financial knowledge. 59% have plans to increase their financial understanding, which I think is really interesting, that distinction between financial knowledge and financial understanding. It's one thing to know the terms and the strategies. It's another thing to understand what they mean and how to implement them. So among those who have plans to increase their financial understanding, 69% plan to start tracking their spending. 28% say they're going to use a budgeting app to help them do that. And 28% regularly read financial news to increase their knowledge and understanding. 23% listen to or plan to listen to financial podcasts, which is a good way of doing that, but you have to make sure that you are listening to the podcasts of those who know what they're talking about. So be careful there. And 22% say they plan to be more open with their family about their finances to help spark discussions. And I think we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago, the start of Financial Literacy Awareness Month, that is no longer the taboo subject that it once was. It used to be that people just didn't talk about money with their family, with their friends, and that is becoming much more of an open subject, and that's probably a good thing. 22%. Say they plan to be more open with their family members about their finances to help spark discussions. Survey also dug into respondents' financial management. 74% said that they currently manage the bulk of their own finances themselves, but only half have a lot of trust in themselves to do that. The reason why so many of us are managing our own money ourselves without any help, even though we don't necessarily trust ourselves in that department, could be because over the past year, 18% of respondents in the survey have felt more disillusioned with financial institutions like banks. Kind of interesting. And as to the goals that we have for the coming months or the coming year, in the near future, in the near term, respondents say they are focused on saving money. 53% say saving money. That's a pretty broad goal. 32% want to decrease or eliminate debt. 27% want to get to the place where they don't have to worry about bills. Well, wouldn't that be nice? You don't have to worry about paying the bills and meeting those necessary expenses. That's a good place to start, 27%. In 2025, 27% say they want to set up a rainy day fund for those unexpected expenses. And one of the things we've talked about how many times is that they may be, we may call them unexpected, but the one thing we know is we can expect them because you have to expect unexpected expenses. It's going to happen. 27% want to set up a rainy day fund, and 26% want to improve their credit score, which I would say, in looking at the bulk of those numbers, wanting to improve your credit score is maybe a good thing, but you take care of all of those other things, and the credit score is going to take care of itself. You don't necessarily have to set that as a goal per se, because if you do all of those other things and you do them well, the credit score is something that's going to take care of itself as a result of doing all of those other things. So interesting stuff, that survey again from Beyond Finance, 2000 Americans for Financial Literacy Awareness Month and Financial Practice Week. So happening around town, it is a showcase for local talent. We have details on this weekend's open mic night at the Black Heritage Library and Multicultural Center. And Jerome Gray is with us along with the feature artist for the evening, Jeremiah Jackson. Thank you both for joining us this morning. We appreciate it.
Good to be here.
So, first of all, Jerome, tell us all about what's happening here. This is, this weekend?
It'll be Saturday the 26th.
Okay.
April 26th. It starts, runs from 4 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a concept that one of my board members, Nicole Smith, and Jeremiah Jackson had talked about. Jeremiah did spoken word at our King program back in January.
All right.
And they were talking programming, and they came up with this concept to try and include the community to showcase talents.
Okay. Jeremiah, talk a little bit about the concept here, the idea behind Open Mic Night.
The idea behind the Open Mic Night, it's something that I utilized, you know, my early years of college, just to gain confidence within myself and use poetry as a form of expression. And I don't know of too many open mic nights here in Finley outside of Coffee and Michi and, you know, a couple open mic events that happens on the campus of University of Finley.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like, why can't we bring that to the Multicultural Center? And that's how the idea came about, because we have so many fantastic and so many artistic minds here in Finley.
Mm-hmm.
Why not make it happen?
Yeah. And what I think is interesting about this is it's not limited to one particular type of art.
Right.
You know, a lot of times you think open mic nights, maybe you think of musicians, singers, or stand-up comedians,
right,
and all of that. Which all of that is great, and that may very well be included, right?
You know, spoken word is a catch-all for any kind of poetic recited out loud, and that can include poetic readings, poetic slams, jazz poetry, music readings, hip-hop music that a lot of people relate to, and can include comedy routines, just as you said.
Yeah.
So it's a broad range there.
And what do you specialize in, Jeremiah?
I specialize in poetry. Like I said before, I used it as a tool to express myself, to gain confidence. And over the years, I see myself become a better writer, better performer. And with the spoken words in particular, it calls that performance out of you. So that's one thing about it. But another fantastic thing about this event as well, there's more than just poetry. There's more than just artists singing. Mm-hmm. There's also a K-pop dance going to be there. And also a Japanese idol dance as well, bringing different cultures into this atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what got you started down the path of poetry specifically?
Finding my way, you know, in college, early years of college, you trying to find your way into college, and then using, as I said before, using poetry as a form of expression. You know, I always kept my emotions bottled in within me, but it wasn't until that I put pen to paper where I began to express my emotions, and after, you know, letting people read my poetry and then being like, oh, I gained something from this. Like, okay, maybe I can just, you know, keep doing this and maybe perform it as well.
That was going to be my next question, because, you know, for one thing, I think there are a lot of people who have some sort of artistic talent. Maybe it's poetry. Maybe it's, you know, any of the other things that you were just mentioning, Jerome.
Yeah.
But then there's that wall of actually going out there and doing it in public. So I'm curious, what led you to decide to share that?
Yeah. Starting is always the hardest part about doing anything, honestly. And with poetry in particular, it's a form of expression. You don't want the world or just people you know to, you know, you don't want them to know the real you, you know, just expressing yourself on paper. But I would say that was in the back of my head, honestly, at first when I first stepped out and started performing poetry.
Yeah.
But just hearing people saying, oh, I was going through this too, or, oh, I relate to this so much. Like, your poetry has done this for me. It's so rewarding.
That's interesting, because I would imagine there's some hesitancy about the vulnerability of getting up there and sharing it publicly. But then what you find is that you are certainly not alone, and that resonates with a lot of other people.
Yeah, and funny enough, that for me personally, at least, that never goes away. Every time I finish writing a piece, and every time I decide on whether I'm going to perform it or not, that always goes in my head. But I always just keep pushing forward.
Yeah. And
Harlem Renaissance. Spoken word ties back to the Harlem Renaissance. Poet Langston Hughes also has civil rights connections. Dr. King, when you think of his I Have a Dream, a portion of that, the first portion of that that people aren't really aware of, he was talking about coming to Washington to receive a promissory note that was made through the Constitution. But then in the end, the part that everybody remembers, that was written. But the part that everybody remembers was the I Have a Dream portion. He gave that extemporaneously.
Yeah.
And if that's not spoken word, don't know what is.
Yeah. So the event, the open mic night, is on Saturday, as you mentioned.
Yes.
Give us all of the details on this here.
Well, it's going to be at the Black Heritage Library, 817 Harmon Street. Mm-hmm. And it'll start at 4 o'clock, run a couple hours after that. We'll have a food truck available, and Aurora's Tamales. Very good. Out of Fostoria.
Yeah.
And we want to emphasize that there's still space available for people that would be willing to perform. They would go online to register for that, or if they see one of the flyers around town, hit the QR code, and that will take you to the form to register. Or they could give me a call at 419-788-6794, and I would direct him to that process.
And
also want to state that this is part of the Community Foundation's Fund for All series of free community activities.
So we free.
Yes.
Absolutely free admission. And I would imagine, given the fact that it is one of those free events, we should talk about this in the context of maybe you are unsure about sharing your stuff. Maybe you hear us talking about this and, you know, somebody said, well, I've written some poems, or, you know, I have written a song, or what have you. I'm not really sure if I'm there yet to get up and share it. This is a great opportunity.
It's a good place to start. It's an opportunity to
or just come out
and watch.
Yep. Yeah. And be in the audience.
Yep.
Because I'm guessing you probably attended some before you actually shared.
Yes, definitely. I attended some, and that made me want to go up there and also try a piece of myself. So
yeah,
open mics is the perfect opportunity to try new things, try your own piece, see how the audience likes it. Mm-hmm. And if you're someone who critiques your own work and wants to go back and restructure some things, the perfect opportunity to practice.
I think everybody does that. Anybody who's ever spoken in public, I know I do that. Everybody does that. They're their own worst critics. Definitely. You don't have to feel bad about that. But if you're not to that point where you're ready to share, just come out and enjoy.
Definitely. Yes.
Again, it is coming up on Saturday. We do have a link on our webpage for more information about the open mic night at the Black Heritage Library and Multicultural Center this weekend. You also have some goodies to give away, right?
Yes, there will be drawings. Everyone will be entered in a drawing for books, cash prizes that we have.
Now, there, you can't beat that. So you've got food, you've got goodies to give away, and it should be an awful lot of fun. So, again, goodmornings.net to learn more. Jerome Gray and Jeremiah Jackson, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, protecting your puppy from parvo, what pet owners need to know about the canine parvovirus. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.